ground sliding out from under them, heard a wheel motor whine suddenly before adjusting to the loose gravel beneath it. Connors was muttering continuously under his breath, so low that even as close as he was, Jamie could not tell if the astronaut was cursing or praying. Maybe some of both, he thought. They passed the one geological probe that had landed on the slide. Its stubby white body stood out against the reddish ground and rocks like a garish advertising sign in the middle of the Sahara. Sure enough, the ground around the probe was firm and easy to drive across, its slope considerably flatter than the area they had just come through.
"Looks easier up ahead," Connors said.
Jamie saw that the ground was flatter and smoother, no craters in sight.
"Good," he said through gritted teeth.
A shadow flicked across the cockpit just as Ilona cried out, "Look!" One of the RPVs flitted past them, low enough for Jamie to make out the glittering eyes of the camera lenses lining its belly. High above, he knew, the other RPV was soaring, watching the entire general area, piloted by Paul Abel. The low one scouted the terrain ahead. Mironov, at its controls, reported what he saw to Connors minute by minute through the earphone clamped to the side of his head.
"Should be getting to the end of it soon," Connors muttered, whether to Mironov or to the rest of them in the rover, Jimmy could not tell.
Just then, the rover skidded, fishtailing in the inexorable slow motion of a nightmare, the forward section suddenly being dragged almost sideways by the jackknifing of the heavier middle and rear segments. Wheel motors screeched, and something made a loud thumping noise. They bounced and jolted, Connors jamming the wheel hard over, first one way, then the other.
"Hang on!"
Jamie braced his booted feet and started to reach out his hands to plant them on the control panel. The rover banged into another rock, slewed at a crazy angle, and finally crunched to a stop. For long moments, nothing could be heard inside the cockpit except the frightened gasping of four sweat-soaked people and the creaking and pinging of overheated metal. Connor swallowed so hard they could all hear it. Then he said,
"Must have been an old crater filled in with loose rubble."
"For dust," Jamie heard himself say in a hollow voice.
"Felt more like sand, sort of."
"Are we stuck?" Connor shook his head.
"Might have to detach this section from the other two, but I think we can make it."
"Without the fuel tank and the lab?" Ilona asked.
"Let me try first."
As gently as a mother caressing her baby, Connors touched his toe to the accelerator pedal. The electric motors hummed in a low register. Jamie felt the rover shudder, inch forward ever so slightly.
"Gotta get all three sections straightened out, or we'll start sliding again," Connors muttered, "like driving a semi-rig."
Slowly, slowly they crawled. The astronaut's long, serious face gradually evolved a tentative little smile. The electric motors whined to a higher pitch, the vehicle moved forward more assuredly, and Connors' smile widened until they were rolling confidently and all his gleaming teeth were showing.
"Gracias Dios," came Joanna's breathless voice from behind them.
Another few bumps, little ones, and Jamie saw that they were on level ground.
"That's it," Connors said happily. "We're on the canyon floor."
"Good work," said Jamie.
"Had a bad minute or two back there. Tell me about it."
Their plan was to stop at the base of the landslide, go outside and take rock and soil samples, then traverse along the north face of the canyon cliffs until nightfall. They would take more samples first thing in the morning, then move forward again until they came to where Jamie had seen his village. There they would see if they could climb up to the cleft where the rock formation stood. At the very least, they could take more pictures of it and try to get a spectral analysis of the formation remotely by using a laser to burn off a tiny amount of rock and photographing the spectrum of the cloud of gas that it gave off.
"I will take this first EVA with you," said Joanna, after they had eaten a quick, cold meal.
Jamie was at the airlock hatch at the back end of the rover's command module. Connors had returned to the cockpit to check all systems and make his report to Voznesensky.
"Ilona's on the schedule," he said.
"She does not feel well," Joanna replied.
Jimmy glanced at Ilona. She was sitting on the edge of the folded-up bunk, pale and visibly trembling. Jamie's own guts were still churning, and he felt sweaty from the harrowing descent down the landslide, but Ilona looked really sick.
"Okay," he said to Joanna. "Suit up."
Making his way back to the midsection, Jamie leaned over Ilona. She looked up at him. Her eyes were watery, her face covered with a sheen of perspiration. "Why don't you go up front and ask Pete to let you talk with Tony? I think you need medical attention."
"I'll be all right," she said, her voice weak.
"I feel foolish.
Call Tony. Get his advice."
She nodded. Jamie made his way back to the airlock. His own legs felt wobbly, achy. He put it down to the tension of the descent.
"Christ, I hope we're not all coming down with something. If any one of us has the flu, we'll all get it, and that'll be the end of this excursion."
Joanna was halfway into her hard suit. Jamie began the laborious task of getting into his. It seemed to take an hour, but finally they were both suited up, backpacks connected, helmet visors fastened down. Connors came back into the airlock and checked them both. It felt unbearably crowded with three of them in there, even though Connors was in his coveralls.
"Stay within sight of the rover," the astronaut warned. "I'll be watching you from the cockpit once I get my suit on."
Standard procedure. There must always be a backup person fully suited and ready to go out at an instant's notice in case of an emergency. It was bending the rules to have scientists go outside without an astronaut with them, but the change in procedure had been okayed by Kaliningrad, for this traverse only.
"We won't be out long," Jamie said. "Looks like plenty of rocks strewn all around here. Joanna can do the collecting while I dig a couple of boreholes."
"Just take it easy and don't strain yourselves," Connor said. It was not until the astronaut had left the airlock that Jamie realized that Connors, too, had been sweating. As the airlock cycled down and the outer hatch popped open, Jamie wondered how Pete could be so absolutely cool at the wheel of the rover and perspiring now that they were safely on the canyon floor.
"Mikhail Andreevich, I must speak with you in private," Mironov said it in Russian, in almost a whisper.
Voznesensky looked up from the comm monitor where he had been sitting for the past hour, watching Waterman and Brumado working on the canyon floor. Mironov's usually cheerful face looked very serious.
"What is it?" Voznesensky asked, also in Russian.
Pulling up one of the flimsy plastic chairs, the cosmonaut said,
"I don't feel well. I feel sick."
"Have you told Reed?"
"Not yet. I wanted to ask you if I should. It might not look right for one of us to be sick."
Voznesensky's face contracted into a frown.
"Then obviously you don't feel sick enough to see the doctor."
Mironov looked very unhappy.
"I ache all over. I feel weak. It's as if I'm coming down with a flu."
"Let Reed examine you. We can't afford to have an infectious disease spread through the whole group."
"But what will they say back in Kaliningrad?"
Deliberately softening his voice, Voznesensky said,
"If you are ill, it's not your fault. The worst that can happen is that Kaliningrad will order you to transfer to the orbiting ship while they send Ivchenko down here to replace you."
Mironov groaned.
"That's what I was afraid of."
"If it must be done, it must be done, for the good of the mission."
Voznesensky reached out and patted him on the shoulder, grinning.
"Besides, Dr. Yang has a much better bedside manner than the Englishman."
"You think so?"
"Once during training, we had a very interesting discussion of Sino-Soviet relations, horizontally. I can vouch for her sympathy and tender care."
Mironov's hangdog expression brightened considerably.
"Probably all I need is some aspirin, I suppose."
"See what Reed recommends. I know you don't want to leave the ground team, but if it has to be, well, there are some compensations."
The cosmonaut pulled himself up from the chair with an obvious effort, sighed deeply, and went off toward the infirmary. Voznesensky turned his attention back to the comm screen. He ran a finger along the inside of his collar, then called up the environmental control display on his screen. The numbers showed everything inside the dome was normal, except for one of the air circulation fans, which had been turned off for maintenance. The dome's temperature stood just a hair below its usual 21 degrees Celsius. Strange, thought Voznesensky. It felt warmer than normal. Jamie felt totally exhausted. He sagged into the cockpit seat and reached for the communication switch.
"God, you look awful," Connors said.
"I feel lousy. Just about had enough strength to get out of the hard suit."
"You were outside too long."
"Maybe."
"A hot meal and a good night's sleep are what you need."
Jamie almost laughed.
"You sound like my mother." Grinning back at him, Connor said,